Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Samach Amud Aleph just after the Mishnah. Really, today should be Kuf Samach Aleph. We'll see how we fare. It's short block these days, so I think we'll be okay. True, but it's not like we have to go through all the details of what Tosfos says. All right, anyway. So to recap, the Mishnah had told us that there are two kinds. The topic of most of our parak is going to be the dinim of shtaros, including some very fundamental ideas about shtaros, that whenever we talk about a shtar in shas, these are givens. The first thing the Mishnah had told us is you have two different formats of shtar. You have get pashut, or the plain old shtar, the type that everybody is familiar with, where you have all the verbiage and the edim sign at the bottom, and then you have get kosher, a tied up or folded up get, or get means a shtar in general, which is much more elaborate. So in what way is it, and the Mishnah had said there's a few differences between them. One difference is that the edim on a get kosher sign on the back, not on the front. And then we also said we had Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. We'll see in the Gemara. We had Rav Chanina ben Gamliel saying that if the edim and a shtar mekosher are on the inside, it's okay because a get mekosher can easily be converted into a get pashut. Or the pashut, all you have to do is untie it. But we'll see what the details are with that when we go through with our little origami things over here and see what exactly a get mekosher is. And then we had another distinction between them is that a get kosher needs at least two edim, a get kosher needs at least three. So what is a get kosher exactly? So you have a number of different opinions among the Rishonim. And the problem is, we talked about yesterday, the problem is we're going to see from the Gemara that even already by the time of the end of the Mishnah, by the time of Rebbe, a get kosher was already beginning to become a bit of a rare thing. We'll see in the Gemara of the beginning of a story on Amud Beis and more of the details of the story in a few blocks, that Rebbe himself had brought him a get kosher, and at first he wasn't familiar with the format. So they were starting to become rare. The original takana of it, the Yad Ramah says, was maybe made at the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. So you're talking already after the second Korban, already they were starting to become obsolete. So by the time the Rishonim came along, they were long gone. So nobody had ever actually seen a get mekosher. So the Rishonim all have to reconstruct what a get mekosher looked like based on the descriptions in the Gemara and based on what they learned from their Rebbe. So the major opinions are as follows. You have a number of different variations within each one of these, but just the broad things are like this. Many of the Rishonim hold, the Rashbam says over here, Rashi says elsewhere, Tosfos, the Rambam, all hold that a get mekosher is basically pleated to look like a fan, kind of. In fact, the Rambam actually uses the expression, it looks like a fan that you use to fan away bugs or whatever. So what you do is, the Rashbam describes it as you write one line of the shtar, you leave the next line blank, you fold it over, you fold it over so that the writing is hidden. Then you write the next line, same thing. Third line, same thing. Eventually, you get through the whole, what's called the Torah of the shtar, meaning the part that varies from one shtar to the next. The date, the name, the amount of money, or whatever it is, whatever details that make up the Torah. Then you have the rest, the Tosfos. Then you have the rest, the Tosfos. The boilerplate of the shtar is all written on a plain part of the document. And therefore, we're saying the edim sign on the back, so you have on the back of each pleat, the edim, one aid sign. But we're going to see in the Gemara, actually two different opinions, how the signatures of the edim are. It's only according to one opinion.
Why did they do this?
We'll see in the Gemara, that they had to make a more complex type of shtar for a reason. We'll get to that in the Gemara. Okay, so that's according to the Rashbam and Rashi and the Rambam and Tosfos and most of the other Rishonim. Told that that's basically what a get mekosher is. It's pleated and then the pleats are sewn together. Then you have the opinion of the Ravid, who says that it's something a lot more elaborate. He describes it basically like this. You start out with that you have the shtar has a bunch of of ribbons, not ribbons really, strips of cloth or paper or whatever it is sticking out from the side. So what you do is you write a couple of lines of the shtar. Let me see if I can. I probably should have unfolded this before I brought it. That is the main thing, indeed. So according to the Ravid, what it is like this then. So you have, the shtar has these strips of parchment sticking out from the ends of it. So you write a couple of lines of the shtar, you fold some of the lines over the others, you tie that together with a ribbon, and the edim sign on the back. not with a ribbon, with these strips rather. You tie them together with these strips, and the one aid signs on the back. I wrote the signatures on the back over here. Actually, according to the diver, they should actually be over here. You tie the strips over here, and the aid sign over here on the side, not covered by the strips. Then you write, from the back of the class. Then you write the next couple of lines, fold them over, and repeat the process as many times as necessary. And again, you have some variations within that. You have, for example, the Meudi hold that the whole thing is not written continuously. You have blank lines in the middle that you fold over. Tosfos takes it with the Rashbam type, the first kind, the pleated kind. Tosfos and the Ramban all do the other way around. There are no blank lines. The whole thing is written continuously, and so you have some of the written lines folded over some of the other written lines. Anyway, that's the point of the Rashi. So you have these strips, and each part is folded over the next, and the strips are tied together, and you have the signatures of eight. A little while. Then you have the Yad Rama. He has an interesting one that he says like this. The actual shtar itself is written just like a regular shtar, continuously. Then what you do after you're done, you have a couple of strings on the tied to the top of it, at least three sets of them. After you're done, you fold it like this. You tie each set of ribbons or strings or whatever around one part of it, and the eight signs next to that. And so you do with the other ones. So that's the Yad Ramah. And they found among the things they found in the cave near the Dead Sea, besides all the famous Dead Sea scrolls, they also found a bunch of documents, all kinds of legal documents, personal letters and whatnot from the period of Bar Kokhba's revolt. And they found over there a couple of documents that seem to more or less go according to the Ramaz way of doing it. Here's an example of one of them that they found. You can find in the back of the volume of Encyclopedia Talmudis, Erech Get. So you have then, this is how it looks rolled up. You have a top part, which is written, here's the Torah, again, the variable part of the Shtar. That would, you have between it and the next part, between that and the Torah, you have a hold. Four strings. That top part is rolled up and tied with the strings. The bottom part is left open, like we have over here. And the agim sign on the back along the line made by each one of the strings. So when you unfold it, then it looks like that. The totem is rolled up and then tied with the string. And then when it's unfolded, you have the agim over there in the middle. No, I mean they didn't put actual wording over here. No, they just put scribbles over here to represent the writing. But that would have been the format of it. So those are the various possibilities what a get in the kosher is. Whatever the case, however you go, according to all these various possibilities, according to this one, the Adam, all of them the Adam sign on the back. There's no question about it. And we're going to have two different opinions in the Gemara whether the Adam signed horizontally or vertically. We'll get into that in the Gemara. But in this one, what they did is parallel to below each string, each place where the string was looped around the Torah at the time, below each of that you had one eight. This is similar to the Yad Ramah. It's not identical because according to him the ribbons are at the top, but it's broadly similar. Okay. Now, so on to the Gemara. Text the Gemara, Menohani Mil. Where do we get this from, that you have these two different types of shtar, and that you have these distinctions between them? Where the Adim sign, how many Adim you'll need, we'll see in the Gemara eventually if there's going to be other distinctions between them as well. At this point in the discussion, the Gemara is assuming that the concept of a get and a kosher is deraita. So we have to find a pasuk for it. Omer of Chanina, de Omakra, because you have a pasuk, it's not a pasuk in Chumash, it's a pasuk in Yirmiyah, but still, that says, Sodes bekesef yiknu, they will buy fields with money. This is part of this is the end of a nevuah where the Eibishter tells Yirmiyah that even though Eretz Yisrael is about to be destroyed, go ahead and buy this field that your cousin Hanamel wants you to buy. The beginning of the story is that sort of Parshas Bahar, because that he wants you to buy so it will stay in the family, because even though Eretz Yisrael is about to be destroyed and taken over by the Babylonians, eventually there's going to be a geula, the Jewish people are going to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and they will once again buy and sell fields. So do this now as a symbol of that. So he tells them, Sodas v'kesef yiknu, they will buy fields with money. V'kosev v'sefer v'chassoim, they will write in a sefer, meaning in a document, v'chassoim, and they will sign, v'ho'ed edim, and they will have edim testify to it. So what do we learn from it? Sodas v'kesef yiknu v'kosev v'sefer, the first half of the pasuk that says they'll buy fields with money and write it in a document. They're poshut. This refers to a get poshut. This refers to a plain old, to a regular format document, a shtar poshut. when it says v'chassoim, when the pasuk continues, that they will sign with the word chassoim, remember, the point is, pashut is kain sefer, the Rashbam says. The word, when it says v'chassoim v'sefer, the word sefer implies like what we're familiar with as a sefer Torah or whatever. Something that's, the text is all continuous, it's not folded and spindled and mutilated like all these various things like we have over here. It's pashut, it's in front of you. Yeah, but it is. No, the Sefer Torah is not a shtar. But the point is, Sefer describes something written in that format, where everything is right there clearly in front of you. But chassoim, then what continues, and sign, remember the word chassoim in Hebrew has a double meaning. It means a sign, it also means seal. Like chosmeinu b'sefer achayim. Zem mekusher, so that refers to the get mekusher, where it's tied up and sealed up and folded up and whatever. And when it says v'hoid edim, so it says that you'll have edim testify on it. Now, edim by itself, the word aid by itself implies that you already have two edim. Less than two edim is not kosher. Therefore, the word v'hoed, have testimony, implies shnayim. Edim, when it says the word edim, which is extra because you don't need it, who else would be testifying, implies shlosha, implies you need three. Okay, so that's what do you mean? Is it two or three? Shnayim l'poshet, shlosha l'makosher. It means if you have a get poshet that's described in the first half of the pasuk, sodus v'kesef yishnu v'chosev v'sefer, then you need two edim. And if you're going to do like the second part of the pasuk v'chassoim, then you're going to need v'hoid edim. You're going to need three edim, not two.
Edim would be two.
Eight, just v'hoid by itself would mean two, because that already constitutes a regular edim. Okay, the question is v'epochana. Okay, fine. You can say that v'chassoim v'sefer refers to a pasher and v'chassoim refers to a makosher. But how do we know? If we're saying two versus three edim, maybe it means a regular one needs three and a makosher only needs two. How do you know? The pasuk doesn't specify. The answer is, okay, you can say logically, fine, but since a get mekosher has more ksharim, since it has these more details to it, these more pleats or ribbons or strips or whatever that it's folded and tied up with and whatever, the fact that the pasuk is telling you that you need this extra tircha, you need to go to this extra tircha of v'chassoim, making it something sealed, therefore, based on that, nisraba be'edav, it's logical to say, therefore, that the pasuk is also machmir and telling you that you need more edav. That's logical. The pasuk is telling you need something more complex, then it also implies you need to make it more complex by having more edim. So it means at least three, yes. That example from Midbar Yehuda had five. Yeah, there is a din, which we learned back in Gittin. We talked briefly at the end of Masechta Gittin about get poshut versus get mekosher. There is a din. You can't have what's called a get kereach. You can't have that there are more Shorim, whether shorim means pleats or ribbons or what have you can't have more of those than edim. If you do, then the shtar is possible. In other words, if you have, for example, let's say go according to Rashi and the Rashbam and everybody else who holds that a get kosher is the kind that it means that a get mekosher rather means that it's pleated, that's fan-like. It means, for example, this one has three pleats, you need three edim. If it had five pleats, you would need five edim, and so forth. You can't have, let's say, five pleats and only four edim. That would be possible. Never. And the reason for that, actually, we learned in Gittin, the reason behind that is because the Chachamim were concerned, particularly in the case of a get, you may have, for whatever reason, you decided you want a whole bunch of people to sign the get. You specifically said, write a get, and I want all 10 of you to sign it, let's say. Meanwhile, only 9 of them, let's say, sign, and then it'll be possible because it didn't follow his tonight. So to avoid that, we learned that in Gittin. So therefore the idea is you can't have less edim than Kshorim. Again, whatever kshorim mean, according to the Rama, that it means ribbons on the end of it, then it means if you have five ribbons, you need five edim, etc. Okay. Rafram Amo Mehocha. Rafram says I have a different pasuk that tells us that you have these two types of shtar. Another pasuk, also in Yirmiyah, in that same story, tells earlier in the story, he describes how he bought the fields from Hananel, and he writes how he says how they wrote out the shtar. I took the sefer, meaning the scroll that was in which the purchase was written, as a chosum, the sealed part, hamitzvah v'hachukim, and the mitzvah and the chukim, which seems to imply that there's different mitzvahs and different chukim, different rules that apply to different kinds of shtaris. That's a golui and the open part. So what? He says I took all of them and Abisha told them put them in an earthenware container so they'll last a long time. Yeah, this is, again, it's in the Haftarah of Parshas Bahar. We mentioned the Chos B'Sefer B'Chosem. I don't recall us mentioning the V'Ekach HaSefer HaMishnah, but it could be. All right. So what does it mean? What do all these terms mean in the pasuk? When he says, I took the sefer ha-mikneh, that refers to a shtar poshut. Because again, sefer means poshut, because it implies that everything is open in front of you like in a sefer Torah. The esachosum zemekusher. When he says, I took the sealed part, that refers to a get mekusher. Now, why would he, according to that, why would he have written two shtaras? So a couple of Rishonim give interesting answers, one of them being, we're going to say soon in the Gemara, that the reason why the concept of a get mekusher came about was because of Koyanim. That's what's going to lead us into the thing about Koyanim getting easily provoked. Yumiya himself was a Koyanim. So was Hanamel, because he's Ben Doido, he's his cousin. So they're both Koyanim. So they were more familiar with the get mekusher type. But for the sake of everybody else around the Eretz Yisrael who's maybe not as familiar with it, most people write a get poshut, maybe they wrote it out in both formats in order to, this way they're on the safe side either way, this way people will recognize it as a shtar either way. They also give an answer maybe that the transaction is taking place in Yerushalayim, because the pasuk before that says Yirmiyo was in jail in Yerushalayim, the field itself is in Anosos, Anosos is the city of Koyanim, Yerushalayim is not. So again, therefore, maybe in Anosos they use the get mekusher, whereas in Yerushalayim they use the get poshut, so therefore they wrote it in both formats to be on the safe side. Anyway, so they had both. So they had the Sefer HaMikneh, which is the Poshut, the Chosum, which is the Kosher, the Esagolui, what about the Poshut continues that he took the open part, the Poshut should be the Kosher. This means the Poshut part of the Kosher. Because again, according to all the various opinions, even a Get Kosher has a certain part that can still be described as Poshut. According to the opinion that it means pleated, you still have the Torah that is written in the pleat, and the Tofes, the boilerplate of the Shire, is written open. According to the various other opinions, according to the Meiri, for example, you have a variation of the Ravid's one, where you have the Tofes at the bottom over there. Even according to the Ravid himself, you could say that just the fact that the actual wording of the Shire itself is still basically the same in a Mekusher as in a Poshut, and therefore it can be called Poshut, Sheba Mekusher, etc. A mitzvah v'achukim, and what about when the pasuk says that he took the mitzvah and the chukim? Eilu dvarim shemen poshut l'makosher. This refers to the details of dinim in which a poshut is different than a makosher. Okay, that namely, what are some of the differences? Like we said in the Mishnah, ze eid of shnayim, ze eid of shloisha. A get poshut needs only, a shtar poshut needs only two. A shtar makosher needs three or more. Ze eidim v'teichay, a shtar poshut, the eidim write, sign their signatures at the bottom, like we expect. And a get makosher, ze eid of ma'achodav, then they sign on the back. Again, you can ask the question, still, who says, where do you see from this process that you should need more edim or more fancy details like that within the kosher, like them signing on the back? Again, same idea, but since it has more ksharim, more knots or ties or whatever it is, therefore it has more edim. Same logic as before. If we assume the pasuk wants us to make a get mekusher more complicated, then that implies the pasuk also wants to make it more strict as far as having to have more aid. Rami by Yechezkel says, I have a third pasuk, this one actually from Chumash, that teaches us about the difference between a get pasuk and a get mekusher. Pasuk says, al pishnayim edim oy al pishloisha edim yachum davar, that a matter can be established based in by the mouth, meaning by the eders of two edim or of three. So you have to ask if tiskayim edus mishnayim lama lekaret l'chol b'shloisha. If you can accomplish an eders with two, then why does the pasuk need to mention three? Obviously, if two is enough, three is more than enough. Loy malach, that's to tell you, shnayim l'poshet, shloisha l'makosher. It comes to teach you that if you're writing a get poshet, you only need two edim, and if you're writing a get makosher, you need three. Well, we're going to talk about it in a second. We're going to talk about that. Yeah, we have a different explanation about it in the Mishnah, not just Rashi and the Chumash. You get this from the Mishnah and the Gemara and Makos, yeah. Again, you can ask the Epochana. Again, you can ask who says maybe it's the other way around. Maybe a poshet needs three and a makosher needs two. And again, the same answer, but same reason, once we have a get makosher, which in the format of it is more complex, with more ksharim, then we assume it also has to be more complex as far as a greater number of it. However, the Gemara says, Bahani lahochi hu da'asu. You're telling me that these psukim are coming to these various psukim that each of the Amoraim quoted are coming to teach us about a get poshet versus a get makosher? No, kochad v'chad b'milsi hudasa. Each pasuk is coming for a different purpose. None of them are meant to actually teach us the concept of get poshut versus get mekusher. L'chivitanya, as we learn in a braisa, when it says the first pasuk that we quoted, sodas v'kesef yiknu v'chosay v'sefer v'chosayim, when it says they'll buy fields for money and they'll write in a sefer and they'll sign it, All that is Eitzah Tova for Mashmalon. The Pasuk is not telling us a requirement that you must have a get poshut or get mekusher, and it must have it, and it must have X number of agent, etc. The Pasuk is just giving us good advice. Yeah.
In the Gemara previously, it didn't say if I'm right, it said it comes from later.
That's why in Maseres Hashas it says Ayin Shom Batzar Chiyun. Yeah. Okay. But it's slightly different anyway, actually, because in Cheskas Abakim, when we quoted this passage, we were mentioning it, we were just saying that Abai said Duma Hossam ate the Torah of Hamashim. I didn't mean, he didn't have to know the Braitha necessarily, but there, the point was, we were talking about the question, why is it necessary to write a shtar at all? But here we're talking about, once you're writing a shtar, the fact that you should have Edim signing it, and the fact that you should have a certain number of Edim or whatever, is Eitzah Tova Kamash Malon. And so the Pasuk is giving you good advice. Don't rely on that word of mouth and that you're going to have a chazaka after 3 years, because you may not. Your chazaka may end up getting challenged or whatever. Better, you should have a shtar, and better, there should be signatures on it. And especially, actually, the Meroy Mesoda from the Nitziv says what the Gemara may mean, what the Braisa may mean, is even though we know we have the famous machlokas all over Shas, Edich Sima Kauti or Edim Mesira Kauti, who are the ones who actually, in the case of a get, for example, which Edim are the ones who actually make it effective, the ones who sign it or the ones who see it delivered? And the halacha is Edim Mesira Kauti. The halacha is more important to Edim who see it delivered. So you would think, therefore, you shouldn't need necessarily signatures in your shtar at all. Write a shtar. Don't bother with Edim. Just make sure there are Edim Mesira and you're good. No, the Pasuk is telling you, Eitzah Tova Kamash Malon, it's a good idea to actually have them sign the shtar. Because what if later on the Edim Mesira leave town or die or what have you, and then you don't have any value? So not necessarily is the Pasuk trying to teach us anything about the dinim of how a shtar should be written. And they could be the same. They could be the same one. Yeah. When a get is given, for example, they usually are. Yeah. Okay. What about for the second one? When the second pasuk mentions all of the things that Yirmiyah took, the sefer amikna and the chosum and so forth. Fine. Fine, that's just how it was. It so happened that they had all these details over there. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's a requirement that it should be written one way or the other. Again, like we said before, Yirmiyah and Hanamel maybe are trying to make sure that no matter where somebody in Eretz Yisrael is from, they'll recognize this as a valid shtar, even if they're not familiar with a get mekusha. But not necessarily that there's an actual din that it must be written that way. And al pishnayim edim or al pishlosha edim, what's that pasuk? Like you said, sender, lahakish shlosha l'shnayim, it comes to teach us the hekish between three edim and two edim. The plugta did Rabakiva v'rabbanon, and that's subject to a machloikas of Rabakiva and the Rabbanon in the Mishnah and Makkos, what exactly it teaches us. The Rabbanon say over there that it teaches us that not only that even three Edim can be mazim two, that two Edim can be mazim three. If you have three Edim coming and saying that Reuben was Machal Shabbos on such and such a date, and later on two Edim come and say Imanu Ayisim, we don't say, well, three are stronger than two, so no good. No, three have an equal power to two, as far as that goes. Or according to Rabbi Akiva, it talks about the idea, first of all, Adder Hadrush, that if you nitpa over Avera, even if you only go along with over Avera, even though you're not necessary to the outcome, then you end up getting punished with them, and how much more so with Midatova, if you join in and doing a mitzvah, even if your contribution wasn't essential, just like with two Edim is enough, but a third joins in anyway. And he says also the idea is that we learn from it that if you have three Edim and even one of them is found possible, then the whole Edus is thrown out, unlike you wouldn't say, in other words, well, you still have two who are valid. So anyway, the point is that pasuk teaches us all those details. Nothing about two Edim in a pasuk and three in a mekusha. Okay. The Gemara says you're right. Ela mekusha midrabanan. Fine. Never mind our whole assumption up until now that the concept of a get mekusha is the raisa. The whole concept is only midrabanan. Ukroy asnachta ba'alma. The psukim are just an asnachta. They don't actually teach us the din. With what we said though, I mentioned a week or two ago from the Ritva, the idea that when the Gemara says something that is asmachta, what it means is the Eibishter had in mind that such a thing should be established, but he didn't make it part of the dinim d'oraita. He left it up to the Chachamim to determine whether they find it appropriate to, and he left the psukim there as hints in case they decide that that's the right thing to do.
First,
So according to that, we would say, what we would say is, similar to what the Gemara says, the Gemara mentions in a few places, for example, the Rajinim that we learned from Sukkim and Yechezkel, and how can you do that? Yechezkel is a Navi, and Navi can't come up with new Dinim, with new Halachas. So the answer is, these were all, these things that Yechezkel mentioned were things that were originally Halachal Moshe Mitzrayim. They were originally Dinim from that the Eivishter gave to Moshe Rabbeinu, but they were never written down until the Eivishter told Yechezkel it as a Nevuah and had him write it down. So that you could say, if we had thought that these things were Daraisa, it would have been the same kind of thing. That was in Yevamos, for example, I think, as far as an oral not being allowed to eat truma, in Menachos, I think, whatever, yeah. Okay. And we haven't, whatever, in Menachos it talks about it in a different context, okay. Fine, the time of my Takina Rabbanim Mekusher, fine, why did the Chachamim come up with the Takana of a Get Mekusher? The reason is, after, here's the famous thing, after the Kahani Habu, because it was a place where many Kohanim lived, but have a Kapti Tuva, these Kohanim were very easily provoked to anger, Umagarshi Nishayhu, and then they would divorce their wives in the heat of the moment. And then, they being Kohanim, they can't remarry their wives. So therefore, Va'abdi, Rabbanan Takanta, so therefore the Rabbanan made this Takana of this whole complex format of a Get Mekusher, that they should use it. That way, meanwhile, the Kohen will have a chance to calm down and then rethink it and decide not to go through with it after all. Yeah.
Just in this time, they were angry. Jewish people.
Hold on. Tosfos asks the question. So nowadays, if a Kohen divorces his wife, does he have to use a Get Mekusher? It sounds like the Sakana was they have to. So Tosfos says yes. In theory, yes. However, the thing is, we're not familiar with what a Get Mekusher is, because we have all these different opinions and many others. Yes. So therefore, better we should just use a Get Kosher. Or, Tosfos says, another explanation. That's one explanation of Tosfos. Then Tosfos gives two other explanations. A second one is the Chachamim only made the Takana in certain places, like that place, which was inhabited mostly by Kohanim. It wasn't necessarily meant to apply to the whole world. And the third explanation Tosfos brings from the Rebbe is not the Chachamim said you Kohanim must use a Get Mekusher, but they made the format available so that when a Kohen comes to Beis Din wanting to divorce his wife, they'll have him use a Get Mekusher, not that it's absolutely required by law, but this way they can have him do it that way.
Why they didn't make it Takana, not much simpler, to say you cannot divorce a Get, you cannot write a Get or coin on the same day as the
Because sometimes you have a need to write a get on the same day as requested. A shidmera needs a get written for his wife under emergency circumstances. You have to start making exceptions. Pretty soon, it would be too difficult.
So much money, wouldn't that be a chance
for? Not necessarily if he's rich, for example,
Cost more money.
What? No, the ksuba he's asking about, but the ksuba, fine, if the Kohen is rich, it might not make that much of a difference. So now, Taka, why is it, how is it, Taka, that a Get Mekusher fell out of use? We talked briefly yesterday. I mean, eventually, you can't divorce your wife without her consent anyway, so then there's for sure no reason for it, but we said that even in the times of Tanoim, it was already starting to become rare. So I was thinking maybe it's just because the whole procedure of giving a Get has become that much more complex anyway. Anybody who's ever been an aide for a Get knows what a rigmarole it is, so there's more than enough time for the guy to calm down anyway. Now, interesting question we got to ask: why should Kohenim be such kapdanim? What is it in the makeup of a Kohen that makes him such kapdanim? Especially, I mean, we know Alpi Kabbalah, the Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya, for example, that a Kohen is isha chesed, the Hayitachin that they're such kapdanim. So there's a few interesting explanations. One of them, Rabbi Yonis and Ibershitz brings in Yardas Dvash, that yes, when times are good, when the Shechina is resting among the Jewish people, and the Hashpa is coming down from Milamayla, as it should be, yes, then the Kohenim are people of Chesed. In a time when the Shechina is hidden, in a time when we're in Golos or whatever, so then it gets transformed and they become Kapdanim.
Yeah, but that's the thing where you can't still have them do the Chesed.
So they do Birkas Kohanim. They're able to bring down Chesed Milamayla, but on a day-to-day basis, they're not necessarily such Anshe Chesed.
They can only do it on certain times.
Yeah. Like on Yom Tov, for example, when you're happy. Yeah. They're one of the men. Okay. Their wives aren't there. They're just telling him. Okay. All right. I saw a Chassidish Vort on it that's brought in some Chassidish Svarim that says the reason is because Faker, they have so much chesed to give and people don't want to take it from them. So it gets them upset that how are you talking? I have so much to give and you don't want to, and you don't, I have nobody to be mashpia to. Then the Alter Rebbe talks about it. There's a mimer that the Alter Rebbe said at the Pidyon HaBen of the Ravash, of Baruch Shalom, the Rebbe's great-great-grandfather. The Samach Tzedek's oldest son, so he had a Pidyon HaBen. So the Alter Rebbe said a mimer at the Pidyon HaBen where he talked about this briefly at the end. He said the vort is, yes, the Kohenim have that's the thing. The Kohenim have the Hei Chasadim, but women in general are associated with Hei Gvuras. So therefore, chesed overpowers gvura, and therefore, dafka, when it comes to gittin, dafka, when it comes to their relationship with their wives, then the chesed overpowers the gvura, and they become kapdanim. He also connects it with the hay sloyim that you give to a kohen by pidyon haben, that the hay sloyim represent the hay, the five sloyim of silver represent the hay chasadim, the silver represents chesed. So yeah. Okay. The question is, okay, so we can understand why you need the concept of a shtar mekusher when it comes to a get, because you need the koyin, you need to give the koyin a chance to cool off. Shtaris ma'itol name. What about any other kind of shtar? Why should you have that format? And the reason is, kedishal etachlos ben gittin l'shtaris. Fine, the reason is because you don't want to start making distinctions between a get and other kinds of shtaris. People are going to think that when it comes, people are going to think eventually, if they don't see this format by any other shtar, they're going to think, even by a get it might be possible. What do you mean? Where are the signatures? Where is the whatever? So therefore, and you don't want that to cause problems. So therefore, you make the format should be usable by other things as well. Also, Tosfos says another reason is also because faket. If you could only use a shtar, if you could only use mekusher for gittin, eventually how to make a mekusher is going to be forgotten altogether because gittin, relatively speaking, aren't written that often. Eventually, taka did fall out of use at any rate, during the time when it was in use, then you wanted that it should be used as broadly as possible, so that when it comes to a koyan needing a get, you'll know how to write a get in a kushar. That's supposed to be the second explanation. Okay. Now we've got to ask, fine. Okay, so we've established what the basis for a get in a kushar is. Now let's figure out, when we say the Edim sign on the back, Heichan Edim Chosmi. Where on the back do the Edim sign? Rav Huna Omer ben Kesher LeKesher. So Rav Huna said between one tie or between one pleat and another. And at this point in the discussion, the Gemara assumes that it means on the inside of the shtar, which we'll discuss in a minute. We'll talk about according to the different formats where the Gemara thinks it is and where it ends up saying it is. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba Amar Achorei HaKsav Keneged HaKsav B'Machutz. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba says you do it behind the writing and parallel to the writing. Again, we'll see in a little bit what that means. So Rami Bachama asked Rav Chista, you've got to ask Rav Huna, according to Rav Huna's explanation, Dama ben Kesher LeKesher, that he says that you do it between one pleat, let's say, and another, and Kasal Kadaitin ben Kesher LeKesher Migavoi, and we would assume that means on the inside of the shtar, in other words, in a place where the signatures will not be visible once the shtar is pleated and folded and sewn or tied or whatever. How could that be? You have a case of a shtar mekusher that was brought to Rebbe. If Omer Rebbe ain't man there, and Rebbe says there's something the matter with the shtar, there's no date on it. Omer Rebbe Shimon bray the Rebbe, so Rebbe Shimon, Rebbe's son, says to him, Shema ben Kshor of Mugla, maybe the date is hidden among the folds or among the ties or whatever. And sure enough, Palya Bechazye, he opened it up and he found the date over there in that part of the shtar. The question is, V'im Issa, if you're going to tell me that the Edim sign in a place which is invisible once you fold and tie up the shtar, Ein Zman V'zeh V'ein Edim V'zeh Mibari Le, then Rebbe shouldn't only be asking where's the Zman. He should also be asking where's the signatures of Edim. No, not the Edim should. Of course the Edim have to know what they're signing. The question was like this. If we assume, here's the shtar. Let's talk according to Rashi and the Rashbam and most of the Rishonim who say that it's made like a fan. The Rambam also says it. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos. He doesn't bring in the Yad HaChazaka, but in Pirush HaMishnayos, on our Mishnah, he explains it. If we assume, for purposes of the argument, that, let's say, for example, you have here's the first line of the shtar, and then here's the signature of the first aid. And then you're going to fold it up, and that signature is invisible. And then the same thing with the second line, and the same thing with the third line, etc. So when this shtar is brought to Rebbe like this, he's not going to see a date on it. He's not going to see signatures of Adam on it either. So and yet Rebbe is saying, I don't understand. Where's the date? Implying he could see the signatures.
Right.
So if you could see the signatures, it can't be according to Rav Huna that you sign it on the inside. Or again, you have the various variations among the Rishonim that maybe he thought it meant it is on the outside, because that's what the Mishnah did say, that's on the back of the shtar, but maybe it's, again, on the parts that are hidden. In other words, you have different opinions among the Rishonim how exactly it's pleated. You have some of them that it's pleated more like Venetian blinds, overlapping, sort of like that. So then conceivably you could have that the signatures of the Adim are on the hidden part, or you could have them on the revealed part. If you assume it's in the hidden part, then again, Rebbe wouldn't have seen it.
You have it like this. This is something that you didn't
follow. That was meant to be like the Rashbam. I mean, it's showing like that, like going in and out like that, but it's basically sandwich.
I would have just done like a
pull-up. Yeah, okay, that could be also. But again, you have another possibility is that it's like this kind of, where each one partially overlaps the previous one. So you could have, for example, then the signatures of the Adim in here, in the hidden part, or you could have it over here on the non-hidden part.
Right.
So that's what he's asking. If you assume that it's in the hidden part, then Rebbe wouldn't have seen the signatures either, and why didn't he ask about that? Tosfos, by the way, discusses, I mean, before we get to the answer, Tosfos discusses a little bit that the fact is, we know, Rebbe obviously knew there's a concept of a get in the cushion. He knew our Mishnah, and he signed off on our Mishnah, at least. I mean, the Mishnah may have come from long before him, but at least he signed off and made it on and made it part of the Mishnah. But he may not have realized, he may have thought that the part that's folded up or hidden or whatever, you don't write any essential part of the shtar over there. For example, what's the date doing over there? What are the, let's say, the signatures of the Adim or whatever? He didn't realize until Rav Shimon Bar Levi pointed out to him that that's how it is. Anyway. That's true. His son may have had other teachers, yeah. Okay. That's what Tosfos actually asked that. Rebbe lo shno, Reb Shimon Minolta. If Rebbe didn't know of it, how is Reb Shimon supposed to know? But that's the answer, is it's not, Rebbe knew of the concept of a get in the kosher, obviously. He just didn't realize that detail, that the essential part of the shtar was written in the pleated part. And Reb Shimon pointed that out to him. Okay. Anyway. Omalei, so sort of...
He didn't know how he wrote it until Shimon knew who he wrote.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. So Chista answers Rami Bachama, Mi Sabrek Ben Keshel Keshem in a Gavroi. You're thinking that the Adim signed between the pleats or the ties or whatever on the inside? Why? Ben Keshel Keshem in a Gavroi. No, what Rav Huna means to say is the signatures are on the outside. So again, according to the Rashbam and everybody else, for example, it would mean that the signatures are over here, so on the back, so when it's folded, you can see the signatures. So Rebbe had no problem with where the signatures are, he just had a problem with where the date is. According to
the signatures, so I have to then like Venetian
blinds. Yeah, so then it would have to be more like Venetian blinds, I guess, because otherwise, in order to see all of them. According to the Ravid, for example, it would mean you don't sign them on this part over here, which is going to be covered up by the ties, you sign them on this part, which is not going to be covered up, etc. So now the question is like this. According to Rav Huna, who says that you're signing on each pleat, according to Rav Yirmi Ba'aba, we'll talk about soon. Rav Yirmi Ba'aba, we're going to say, holds that the signatures go crosswise to the writing on the inside of the shtar. But according to Rav Huna, who says that, for example, they sign on each one of the pleats, the problem is, you have nothing at the bottom of the shtar then. You have this whole shtar is written, you go all the way to the bottom, and then the Adim are signing on the back. But with the shtar partial, there's no problem. The signature is on the bottom. There's no possibility of adding anything between the body of the shtar and the signatures. We're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that there's a certain maximum distance between the bottom of the shtar that's allowed to be between the bottom of the shtar and the signatures of the Adim to prevent somebody from inserting more text in there and claiming it was part of the shtar. But in a shtar mekusher, where the Adim are on the back, and according to Rav Huna in particular, the Adim are on each pleat or whatever, why aren't we afraid that he's going to forge and write whatever he wants at the bottom of the shtar, at the bottom of the front side of the shtar, and then you have the Adim sign on the back, and then, and yeah. The answer is the cost of a shor over kayim. Yes, but we would have to answer that the shor, in order to be kosher, it has to say at the bottom of it, shor over kayim. This is established, this is firmly established. Once you write that at the end of the shor, then there's no adding anything after that.
But it's a little line.
You write the whole text of the shtar, plenty owes plenty money on such and such a day. And at the end, right before the agent's signature is a line of one with one blank line between them, as we'll learn tomorrow, you write shor over kayim. You can see, by the way, if you look on anybody's ksuba, any of us who are married or can look at our ksubas, if we know where they are. The point is more that your wife needs to know where it is. That's true. But anyway, the point is that, if you look at your ksuba, if you have it available, you'll see at the bottom over there before the last thing, before the Adam signatures, it says shor over kayim. Now, if you actually were talking about in terms of a get and a kosher, technically, most of the Rishonim say you don't actually need it in the case of a get kosher for the reasons that we're saying, because the Adam signatures are at the bottom there anyway, and you don't have room to write anything extra. Nevertheless, the minhag has developed to write shor over kayim even on a get kosher, and therefore the poskim say it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, but therefore, taka, if you don't write shor over kayim, then it's not the way that a shtar is normally written, and therefore it's possible. So, medina de gemara, you shouldn't need to write shor over kayim on a shtar kosher, according to most opinions. But nevertheless, the minhag developed to do that. So the ziyuf would have been in the case of a shtar kosher would be. So if you didn't have shor. No, not a fold. Remember, you have the tofes at the bottom. The tofes is not folded.
The
edim are signed on the fold. Fine, but you would write at the bottom of the tofes, and you would write at the bottom of the tofes, and fine. Okay, so you have five folds, and you have five edim. Fine, but there's still tofes underneath that. And at the bottom of the tofes, you could write whatever you wanted. So the answer is, once you write shor over kayim, then no, there's nothing, there's not writing, there's no writing anything after that. Okay, question.
Where do you write that? After the
tofet. After the tofet. You write the whole tofet and the whole tofet at the bottom.
The space between the tofet and the last, the
shor of the kayim? No. Okay, so the question is, v'nechush dom akos of my deboi, v'hod akos of shor of the kayim achrina. Fine, why don't you have the problem that still you write shor of the kayim, still the person will continue writing more things after that, more false things in the shtar or whatever, and then he'll write a second shor of the kayim. The answer is chad shor of a kayim kaspinim, tre shor of a kayim like kaspinim. Because that's no good. If it has twice shor of a kayim, then you don't write that, and therefore if anybody sees a shtar, oh wow, first time, I think this is our first time ever. Thank you. You can't have a valid shtar, cannot have twice shor of a kayim, and if it does, then you know it's forged. Okay. How about another possibility? The lechush dom mochet le the shor of a kayim. Why don't we have to be concerned that maybe you took an existing document that had shor of a kayim at the end of it, you erase the words shor of a kayim, the cost of my deboy, you write whatever you want else in the place of that, and the hodder cost the shor of a kayim, and then you write another shor of a kayim at the bottom of that. The answer is you don't have a problem with that because Rabbi Yochanan had said like this. If you have a shtar where you left out some words or some letters and you put them between the lines, like, you know, we all have sometimes, we write out something and we forget something, so we put a little thing like that and then write on top of it. If it's mekuyemet, if at the end of the shtar you write a kiyum, you say, I'm adding detail before the words shor of a kayim or before the signatures that these particular words are tluya, then it's ksheira. And by the way, if you want, you can look in the back of Oitzim and Hage Chabad for Nissan through Sivan, for Munchain, Allah Shalom, you have facsimiles of a number of Shtarim Mechiras Chometz from the Rebbeim over the years. Some of them in their own Ksaviyad, some of them in Ksaviyad of Matikim with their signature, whatever it is. You have one from the Rebbe Rashab, it's also printed in Igros Kodesh, where he had left out two words in the description of where one of the types of chometz is. He added it between the lines, and you can see there, right before the end of the shtar, you have over there the words such and such on line 6 of the document are toloi vav dalad kuf v'dein kiyume, and this is certifying that that's the case. So if you do that, then it's kosher, because then it makes it clear that the shtar was originally written that way. But machak posel, but if you have an erased area in the shtar, then it's posel. Va'afal pishe mekuyam, even if it is mekuyam, even if you say at the end this part was written on an erased part. V'loy omru machak posel, elabim kaim shor v'kayim, uchshir shor v'kayim. However, we only say that that an erased area is possible only if it's in the place where the word shoravakaya should have been written, or kashir shoravakaya, in other words, not in the middle of the shtar. Or kashir shoravakayam, and as long as it's space that's at least large enough to write the word shoravakayam. Because then, Taka, you would have the problem that we said. You could have erased shoravakayam, written something else, continued on the shtar, and written another shoravakayam.
So there's a special space where it's shoravakayam.
Well, you would usually have it at the end of the document. But the point is, in other words, if you have, let's say, right after the date or something, you have a matzah, that wouldn't necessarily make it possible because you're not going to write shoravakayam over there. There is actually a machlokas rishonim, whether, based on this Gemara, when do we say a machak is possible, even if it's mekuyam, and when not? In other words, do we accept if you have a shnar that has a machak in it that has an erased area and then something else is written on it? Do we say that? If it's in the place of shor of akayim, we're saying for sure it's possible. But if it's not, if it's someplace else in the shtar, is it acceptable? I mean, the fact of the matter is, you might have had, for example, that originally it said there that he owes him 30, let's say, and he rewrote it and he erased it and wrote 200, let's say, over there. So you have a whole discussion among the poskim when exactly a machak is acceptable and when it's not. We have different opinions about that. Anyway, the point is that if the place where you would expect shor of akayim to be erased has been erased. And it's at least the size of the space where Shor of Akayim could have been written, then yes, you have to be choshesh that in fact that's what was done, and therefore the shtar will be possible. So you have no problem, therefore, there's no problem, therefore, that he could have erased Shor of Akayim, because then automatically the shtar is going to be possible. Okay. All right, so those are the questions according to Rav Huna, which, okay, we've answered the questions against him. Now, what about the Rav Yumi Ba'aba de Omar Achore Aksav or Kuneged Aksav and Bechutz? What about now, let's turn to Rav Yumi Ba'aba's opinion, who says that they sign behind the writing and parallel to the writing on the outside. The question is, Leichosh Duma Kosim Gavoy Maidaboy, why don't we have a similar concern that he may write whatever he wants at the end of the shtar? Now, the premise, according to Rav Yumi Ba'aba, is you don't need to write Shor of Akaya. But if you wrote Shor of Akayim, it would be very simple. You have the same answers as before. But if we assume, according to him, and that's what the Gemara is assuming, that according to him, there's no need to write Shor of Akayim at the end, then you have a similar problem. You're going to write you're going to write whatever you want at the end of the shtar, and umachtim sadi yaserim avro. You're going to add extra edim on the outside. You'll have an extra edim sign for Omer, and you'll say, you know why I wrote a longer shtar? I just did it because I wanted to make sure there were as many edim as possible, so therefore I wrote extra. And I planned to have extra, I planned to have, let's say, 10 edim, so I wrote a shtar long enough with room for signatures on the back of 10 edim. In the end, only eight of them showed up, so that's why the shtar goes beyond the signatures of the edim, but it still should be kosher, and really it's not. So Rav Chista answers him, Mi Sabrat Edim Kasidran Chasimi. You think that the Edim sign in order, that let's say, for example, again, that they just sign behind the pleats over here, that they sign behind each line, where then Taka you'd have a problem because you have the end of the shtar that doesn't have signatures. No, Edim Mi Masala Maila Chasimi. The Edim sign from the bottom up. Meaning, in other words, so again, you have many different opinions according to the various formats of what a shtar makusher is. What it means exactly, according to the Rashbam, what it means is if this is the shtar and it ends, the last line of the shtar is over here, it means the signatures of Edim have to begin here, exactly on the other side where that last line is,
wow,
and continuing upward
that's
along.
That's why you saw the signatures didn't see the mom.
Right. Yes. Because the signatures are on the exposed. No, well, that we asked before according to Rav Huna. But yeah, according to Rav Yumi Ba'aba, yeah, he would say the signatures were never in the hidden part in the first place. Yeah.
We asked the question according to Rav Huna.
No, that was before according to Rav Huna. Rav Yumi Ba'aba would still have to understand the story as according to him as well. So we're saying that what they do is they sign they sign crosswise on the shtar. They sign like this.
Where is
the line? So the actual writing of the shtar itself goes down, let's say, all the way to here, all the way to the bottom, let's say. Starting from the top, going all the way down to the bottom. So when they sign the first aid signs here, the second aid here, et cetera. And that way, we're not worried about the top, that if he cuts off the top, there's no shtar. The problem would be... Well, that point we're going to get back to soon, actually. But what we're saying is, that the important point is, therefore, that if you find a shtar where the signatures, let's say, begin here, but the writing on the shtar goes all the way down to here, then you know there's a problem. then you know that he's
going to give me $1 million.
Then you know that he added something that he wasn't supposed to add. Question is why? Yes, but don't you have the opposite problem then? Never mind adding stuff to the shtar after it was written. Don't you have the problem of subtracting stuff from the shtar then? Namely, imagine that the last line of the shtar has, let's say, for example, has something that would harm the interests of the one who's holding the shtar. Let's say there might be a tnai under which he wanted to repay. There might be something over there that he already paid back part of it or whatever. So what he'll do is, cut off that last line of the shtar. The guy is Leila Reuven Bade. Along with that, he'll cut off the word Reuven from Reuven's signature. Let's say he signed Reuven Ben Yaakov Eid. Umiskasha, the Ben Yaakov Eid. And it'll still be kosher because it still has the words on the back of it, Ben Yaakov Eid. So you're going to look at it, you're going to see this shtar says Ben Yaakov Eid, which that's fine, as we'll talk about. You're not going to realize that originally he signed Reuven Ben Yaakov Eid, and Reuven has been cut off along with the bottom part of the shtar. Don't you have that problem? And how do we know that's valid? It's not, as we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin. If you say Ish Pliny Eid Kosher, if you write Ish Pliny Eid is kosher, even if he doesn't write his father's name. And vice versa, I skipped a couple of lines over here. The sound Ben Ish Pliny Eid kosher. If all it says on the shtar is Ben Ish Pliny, so he doesn't write Reuven Ben Yaakov, he just writes Ben Yaakov, and we recognize that this is Reuven Ben Yaakov's signature, then it's okay. So then, don't you have that potential problem over here? The answer is Diksiv Reuven Ben B'chadar of Yaakov Eid Ilavet. Yes, but what you do is you don't write Reuven Ben Yaakov Eid as one long line. You write Reuven Ben on one line and Yaakov Eid on the other one. So now even if you cut off the word Reuven, you're cutting off the word Ben also. You're just gonna have the word Yaakov now. So Yaakov Eid, and that's no good if this is Yaakov's signature. You take off Reuven Ben and you're gonna take off Reuven Ben, you're gonna be left with Yaakov Eid.
Reuven Ben Yaakov
Eid. Yeah.
So you can't have Yaakov Eid.
Yeah.
That's to be Ben something.
Yeah.
So Reuven Ben goes in one line, and then Yaakov goes on the next line. So if you cut down anything, you're cutting off something
that... Incidentally, by the way, Tosafot has talked about another interesting possibility, which is the word Reuven itself has the word Ben in it. So conceivably, you could cut it off in such a way where you're going to wind up with Ben, Yaakov, yeah.
You'd have to be really...
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. And that would also work. It's not Ish Pliny Eid Kosher. Because we also learn in that same Mishnah in Gittin that if you only wrote Ish Pliny Eid, so you wrote Yaakov Eid, that's kosher. The answer is Deloik Siv Eid. The answer is we have to be talking about that in this shtar, you don't write the word Eid. You just write Reuven Ben Yaakov, and therefore if you cut off the Reuven Ben part and all you have is Yaakov, that's not going to be a valid signature anyway.
But that's
it's not necessarily under Reuven, that's the thing. But not necessarily does the second line begin, that's what we're going to answer on Amud Beis. We're going to talk about that possibility. Right now, we're not assuming it has to be that way. Right now, we're assuming it could be Reuven, Ben, Yaakov, Eid.
It has to be something.
Yeah.
It has to be a case, like it says, Naya, Ben, Yaakov. Then Naya, the same one,
yeah.
Ben.
Yeah. Okay. So if it doesn't say Eid, then you're safe, because as long as you have Reuven, Ben on one line and Yaakov on the next line, there's no possibility of cutting off Reuven, Ben, and being left with Yaakov, which would be a valid signature, because not unless it says Eid, and it doesn't.
So why can't we just answer that? So, it's the kosher, it's only kosher if you write the full name.
But it's not. Once we say that signature is a kosher with Ben Yaakov Eid, or
maybe someone's asking that question.
No, but then it should have said so. But we don't find it. Then you don't find it. Yeah. Okay. The Iboy Seima, or another possibility, La'ilam Diksiv Eid, you could be talking about that it says Eid there. Diyadin Eid, Hochasimus Yod, Elav Diakavu. Fine, but the case could be, we recognize the signature, and we recognize that it's not Yaakov's signature. So even if it said Yaakov Eid, we will know when Eidim comes to be Mekayimir, or Basin comes to be Mekayimir, or whatever, they're going to know this isn't Yaakov's signature. Therefore, they're going to realize there's something fishy over here. So Mele, if it said Ben Yaakov, they could say, yeah, we recognize this is Reuben's signature. Reuben is Ben Yaakov. They're not going to realize a line was chopped off. But if all it says is Yaakov Eid, then you're good. Okay. question is, okay, but still, who says? Maybe Reuven is signing using his father's name, like in honor of his father. The answer is, L'shavik in Shmei Didei, V'chosim B'Shmei Da'avua. Yes, but a person is not going to ignore his own name. A person is not going to ignore his own name and write only his father's name. He might write Ben Yaakov, fine. He's not going to, just write Yaakov Aid, representing that he's the son of Yaakov. Question is, okay, but you could answer that maybe he's using the word Yaakov as a simon representing his name. And we find sort of thing, the Rav Tzayer Kavra, as we find, for example, in Gittin, that Rav, instead, when he signed a letter or shire or whatever, instead of writing his name, he would make a picture of a fish. Rav Chanina Tzayer Chavrusa, Rav Chanina would draw a picture of a palm tree. Yeah, we learned that in Gittin. Rav Chista Samach, Rav Hoshia Ayin. Rav Chista would sign with a letter Samach, Rav Hoshia would sign with a letter Ayin. And Rav Bar Rav Huna Makusa, and Rav Bar Rav Huna, would sign using a picture of the mast of a ship. So therefore, by the same logic, a person could use the word Yaakov to represent it as a symbol for his name rather than his actual name. The answer is, L'chotis Inish, L'shavuya, L'shmei Davor Simona. A person is not going to be so chutzpahdik as to make the name of his father a simon for his own name. To make a picture like that is one thing. The Gemara mentions, by the way, in Gittin over there, that these chachamim, they had to have previously signed on letters and other such things with these things to the point where these became recognizable as their signatures. Once it became famous. Now, why did they use these symbols? The Rashbam over here says a sharp thing. He says anybody who tries to find a reason for these symbols is just making a mistake. He says maybe it's just because of what they're mice in. Rav used to eat fish, and Rav Chanina used to eat dates. So the Maharshal says on that, maybe what the Rashbam means is they would eat them with covered Shabbos. Rav was big on eating fish with covered Shabbos, therefore he made it his symbol, or fish. Rav Chanina was big on eating dates for covered Shabbos, because you know, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're supposed to eat on Shabbos whatever is the most pleasurable food for you. So therefore, But one other quick thing, and then we got to go, is Rabbi Yaakov Emden says a vote on it, why they use these symbols. He says, Rav used the symbol of a fish to represent that he should be free of the Ayin Hara, because you know fish are not subject to the Ayin Hara. Rav Chanina was a Rosh Yeshiva, so he used a palm tree as in Tzadik HaTama Yitzchak, and he's higher than everybody else. Also, you can use the love on palm tree to whip people when necessary, so it represented the idea that he has the power of corporal punishment on people.
Is that in Rachli, if someone has a dream?
Not in Rachli, but in Yuma, yeah. If somebody has a dream that hangs a palm tree, it means they'll become a Rosh Yeshiva, yeah. Rav Chista used a samach, representing the word you can be soymach on what's in the shtar. Rav Hoshia used an ayin to represent I was my ayin. I checked into what it says in the shtar. I don't remember if he says why Rav Bar Rav Huna. I don't remember what he says on why Rav Bar Rav Huna in the mass. Yeah.
Me responsible.
Maybe. The Rav Yaakov Emden says this.
For the first explanation, I'm still wondering how it's samach and ayin.
Oh.